Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and I am here again with Josh Olswich. And hey, Josh, we are over $5,000 per Bitcoin right now. What do you think about that?
Feels pretty good. I thought you were going to say, what do you think about them apples?
I was going to say, what do you think about them apples? And then, you know.
That's like an old school, like old timer slash southern, like, you know, thing. I don't know.
It's a little bit too I told you so, whereas.
Yeah, I guess.
I had some bullish confidence. I think both of us did. We even got a couple of shout outs for having expressed our targets, though neither of us, I don't think, would have said, yeah, it's obviously going to happen in one day. But that's what we got. Classic Bitcoin type of move to just like lollygag for months. And then what was the range? Have you done the calculation? I'm doing it now. But it was, 25% in a day. So not what I would have expected. I was thinking that we had a lot of offers to grind through, but we hit some pretty high targets there. So far we've topped out at around 5342, and I'll note that on January 1st I said my Q1 Bitcoin target was 5300. It hit it on April 3rd, so I was wrong. But it's been a heck of a move. We have a lot to talk about in terms of pricing, but we're going to talk about some other stuff as well for folks that are following along. We want to talk about IEOs and ICOs. I don't even know what the difference is, but we're going to discuss some of the ones that have been going on. We're going to talk about this Bitcoin break and whether the bear market's over, some narratives, correlation, alt season. That's basically our topic list. So before we get to those other topics, let's dig in a little more to this range. In terms of like targets and what we expected versus what happened, how have you been looking at this?
Well, so I was fully out basically between 4.8 and 5. So anything now is just kind of like shocking to me as far as the amount of overperformance and the amount of ability to stay in this range and not like retrace 50% immediately. So that to me is more bullish than anything. One issue with that though is that a lot of the open interest, I guess you could say, seemed to decrease substantially on that jump up. And there were some tweets about it, like this suggests that anybody who bought at 4.2 or 4.1 or lower isn't necessarily still holding, but they treated it as like a trade. You know, they bought low, they sold high. Anything now just kind of like chopping around. That being said, based on the volume chunk, volume bite out, if you look at the volume profile of the visible range, you can see there isn't much until like 5,800.
Yeah. So there's definitely like, still room above after consolidation. But what you're just talking about in terms of this surprising lack of retraces, the largest we've had was, I mean, it was pretty small and it was also pretty rapid. I've been surprised by that too. And maybe it just goes to show there's a lot of people that are really pretty hungry to get in on this, you know. Maybe more people that were out of the market than we expected. So if you go from like where Bitcoin started really uptrending out of a sideways range, so maybe like a day or a few days before the actual push, if you start that as where your fib is, like around 3880, then we got a 0.382 retrace almost perfectly when it came back down to about 4,800. So that's like pretty light. That's about as minimal of a retrace as you would expect. So we're consolidating well in like on the top side of the range. Whereas oftentimes you'd expect a 0.5, maybe even a 0.618 retrace off of a move that's that severe. And with Bitcoin, we just have not gotten that. So,
yeah. It's even breaking like bear divs consistently up to the upside, or like holding bear divs. There was a rising wedge in the low time frame that it that was where we got the pullback from, but you know, didn't go to 50% like you were saying, it went to 382 or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, I think at one point it just started cascading because people were either forced to close shorts that they had on, and then people were hedging too early, and then, you know, like all this stuff kind of came together that forced it to grind up.
Well, and the other thing was the timing was really weird. I'm normally asleep, or would have been asleep. It was like between midnight and 3 Eastern or something.
Yeah, it was late. I know I was up late. I was up late trying to know, like trying to figure out, is this done or not?
So like the US market's asleep while this is happening. And if you have alerts or alarms or whatever, like you're panicking because you're seeing, if you're short, you know, you're waking up panicked, you're panic closing. It all happened in an hour. Like we went from 4.23 to 4.8 in an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was pretty severe. And I was in the crowd that thought it was a little too much too fast. In terms of how I trade it though, like I like to think of the way I manage my kids' portfolio as like the responsible person, longer term outlook. And I didn't really get rid of anything of theirs on spot until really I got pretty fortunate with them, and it wasn't until we were up there like well above 5K, like in that close to that top 5,200, 5,300, I took them out of some positions, just like thinking it was a little obscene at that point, because what normally happens is after you have a rapid move like that, there are people that go long too late and they essentially have to be punished. There has to be a retrace. Mm-hmm. And we just didn't have anything. And that's finally when we got that 382 retrace. But we still haven't had anything to really punish anyone that was longing late or anything like that. And maybe it has to do with just so little new open interest. Like there's just not enough people interested in the market yet. But I'm still personally expecting a retrace down at some point. Now it could do a whole nother leg up. We could go to 5,800. I don't know. But like it'll be hard for me to think we just, you know, go off to the races, new bull market, all that stuff, without coming back down to the 200-day moving average again and confirming the 200-day. Mm-hmm. There's a few things that haven't happened. One is the 50 and the 200 haven't crossed, which is usually really late and lagging anyway. But mm-hmm. usually you get a retrace back to when those types of things happen. The 200 is still going to be moving down on us, like it's not curling up, because it's still including the drop from 6K, if I recall correctly. So, yeah, that's still in the calculations on the moving average. So, like, the 200 is going to be continuing to go down, meaning our retest could end up a little deeper even than the whatever you want to think, like 4,600, 4,700 by the time it occurs. And, yeah, I mean, eventually I think that people that are not in will have a cheaper place to buy. They just might miss some volatility that's going on right now. So,
I mean, at the very least, like you're saying, like any real entries are going to be after the 5,200 cross at the 200, and any other real entries are going to be at the key June to get that key June bounce. Most likely, those are going to be basically the same level when it happens.
Yeah, by the time it comes back. And right now, for people that are listening, the Kijun is 4,350 and the 200 day is around 4,600. So like those are going to start working their way towards each other. And also you mentioned your targets, the cloud top was around 4,800. It paused there for a hot second and then blasted through it on the daily. And then it retested it on the next two dailies from the top side. So like that's enormous levels of strength to basically stop at the top of the cloud in terms of what's going on there. The Bollinger Band midline is now only at 4,200. So like that would be an example. That's a 20-day moving average. That's a fast moving average. That'll start moving up really quickly, obviously. But there's a long way that it could retrace, and like people should still be bullish. Like they would be dip buying opportunities. But if I was, you know, managing a portfolio here where there was cash on the sidelines, I would be taking it slow. Like, I wouldn't necessarily say, oh yeah, it dipped to 4,900 or it dipped to 4,800. Let's go all in.
Yeah, for sure. No, it could go to 4,250 and it'd still be bullish. So
right, like, exactly.
I'm in no rush to get back in here at this level. There's certainly some conditions where you can bite into some stuff on lower time frames. But like, I mean, if you go to the weekly cloud, like there's a probably less than 5% chance this happens. I'll repeat, less than 5% chance. but it's possible we hit 7,550, which is the
weekly Kijun.
Weekly Kijun. Like if I'm wrong about 6,200, which I don't think I am based on the volume, but if we breach 6,200 for some stupid reason, 7,550 would be the next target based on just pure technicals, you know?
Yeah. I actually think that levels over the breakdown from 6K, which really our breakdown happened around 6,300, 6,400.
Mm-hmm.
I think levels over that are really interesting because that's where lots and lots of people are saying that's the like total down market is over, new all-time highs if we clear 6,400. And I like... you know, ever since the bear market started, I've been wanting something like that, some sort of like so obvious of a level that you end up, you clear and then you lose it. And that just punishes market participants, which markets love to do. So yeah, I think actually 7,500 and then a retrace within some large candle, like within a weekly close or something that goes back below the 6,400. I think that would be right up the alley of what would be logical and painful for a lot of people that would get back in because it's above 6,400, right?
Yeah. It's like if we get, so that the buying at the horizontal, there's some confluence with like these $1,000 or 1,000 coin buys that happened in quick succession during
the mysterious $100 million buyer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. So like I wasn't following this, but apparently it made the news.
So, like, if that happens again, like, yeah, sure, we can go, we can go wherever we want to go, you know.
Yeah.
But we had a pattern. It was a reversal pattern. The pattern hit its target. The cloud hit its target. It's a mean reversion on daily. Blah 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 blah. So to me, anything else beyond where we are now is just pure overperformance. I do like the weird psychological numbers of like 5555 as resistance or like 5666, stuff like that, certainly possible, but it looks overextended like on oscillators. If you go to the daily RSI, it's like at 80 to 90 plus. You usually don't see that too often.
Yeah.
At least for like a sustained period, like it can range between like 80 and whatever, 80 and a million, but it's not going to just pulse continuously, you know?
Right. Yeah. And they all look, I don't know from like a Stoke perspective, I don't know a time frame that's like not overbought. and I know they, yeah, I mean, like you said, they can stay that way. They need a wave. They need a wave a little bit though, even if they're still in overbought territory. One of the things I'd been watching because I like it's zooming out to the weekly, but then narrowing to the single cloud, so the faster settings on the cloud. It was a really nice indicator for bumping over the Tinkin, and like right now we're essentially kind of battling the single weekly Kijun. It's around 4,975, and then the 50 week moving average is around 5,700. So yeah, I mean, like I think a lot of these levels will come into play. Like if people are looking to take profit, or if they're looking to see like what might some resistances be, I think going out to those higher time frames and then considering how could these dailies close, how could these weeklies close in line with some of those resistance areas is a pretty decent practice. And then like try to mark those levels from the weekly and then go look at your lower time frames in terms of how those could be influenced based on lower time frame patterns that you see. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's fantasy land to just be super, super bullish right now. Like beyond 6,200.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot of people talking about that, but I see a few people talking about that. I think we've got like 5-6 months left before we actually break the 200, like on a real level.
Break so, the 200 what?
Like just like have a real like sustaining bull trend, not just like one candle broke the 200. Oh, it's all over, you know. Like yes, that's obviously massively bullish considering how long it took to break the 200, but we also broke the 200 several times in 2018 and it didn't really matter, you know.
The 200 EMA.
Yeah, like even the MA probably, right?
No, the the SMA in 2018 was like just a hammer. That's why like I've been pretty much a full SMA convert because mm-hmm. of the power of the 200 day.
I mean the 20 SMA is like the gold standard, right?
Right.
Based on that bolt
because of, and Mr. Bollinger, shout out to Mr. Bollinger by the way too, because the weekly, we talked about this on the last episode, the weekly Bollinger Band midline / 20 week moving average, we cleared it the prior week, had a nice little kind of miniature bull candle, and then just mm-hmm. popped. It was the clear, in my opinion, winner of like both resistance throughout the bear market and then also the clearest sign of strength this time around, because we didn't get instantly rejected off of it. A lot of altcoins had already moved above it, that kind of stuff.
And so that's what, the 140 week daily, right?
Something like that.
Just 7 times 20, right? Or am I doing the math backwards?
Maybe, I don't know. I can't do that math right now.
Well, 20 weeks times 7 should be 140 days, right? So yes. I'm just saying, like, if you're like a daily charter, whatever,
yes,
you can just
yes.
pop on the 140
SMA.
Yeah, yeah.
You could use.
Anyway.
But yeah, so over the 200 day, over the 20 week, but like you said, like there's a big, strong zone of resistance overhead. I actually think that the likelihood of hitting that is pretty high, at least higher into the 5Ks. Like if we get a test down to the 200 day, I'm a buyer for sure, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I want that move up into the high fives, low sixes. That's a big move. I just don't like it as much from right here. So like this is a place currently where having some ammo ready for the sidelines, if you will, for the buying opportunities is something that I'm interested in. So yeah
I think I mean, you buy anything below 4-6 unless the candles or patterns look bad. Like if we start getting some weird bearish stuff, then I would avoid it personally, but otherwise we look good as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I agree. And in terms of my Q2 outlook, I posted this on Twitter somewhere, but I think that it's likely that we're hitting an accumulation range in the like in-between zone. So if our accumulation range after the 6K breakdown was basically below like 4,200, I think now 4,200 to 6K is our accumulation range where I think we could easily spend the rest of the year roughly in that range.
Yeah, I agree.
And
go ahead.
Is it the 200 week on, let me see the value of that. The 200 week, the one other one that I've been talking about. Yeah, it's up to 3,500 or so. And it'll continue to move up from here. But I, you know, like I think we might even see like a really nasty wick that tests the 200 week before all this is said and done. Like people talk about capitulation wicks in bear markets being necessary. I don't think they necessarily even have to happen on the bottom. Like they could happen at some other point. Like when people are like, oh no, this is just continuation of the bear market after you have a couple of bad days and then go wick down something nasty like that. And then that's the bottom. And it's the type of thing that I want to be on the lookout for. And therefore, there's not a whole lot you can do to avoid that other than try to avoid like super high margin and, you know, protect yourself with stops, because we could have a day where just like we went up 20%, we could have some kind of liquidity crisis and it goes and taps that 200 week or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I don't know if, I think we talked about this last pod, I don't remember, but like October is going to be massive. It's Q4, it's Mt. Gox creditor meeting, it's both ETF, Bitcoin ETF deadline, final deadlines. So like the most bearish thing would be ETFs denied, which is most likely in whatever anyway, but and then the Mt. Gox stuff just gets like really market sold market. Or some, yeah. It's like if that happens Q4 or near, you know, whereabouts, all at once, that's probably the most bullish, because then we can get what you're saying is like a massive spike or something crazy, whatever,
be done with it.
Yeah. And just,
and that like, was October 10th or something like that, I think you said last time.
Yeah. All those are like before mid October. And then there's also the ETH hard fork in October. That's or October, November, somewhere around there. Maybe November now.
Yeah.
But if you look at the correlation between ETH price and hard forks, there aren't many data points, but basically price goes up before the hard fork and sells off after. So
yeah. A lot of sell the news type of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So listeners may be a little surprised to hear us expressing caution now, and maybe we're just permabulls now in disbelief after a long bear market. I don't know.
I mean, I hit my target. What more? Like people were calling me insane before when I had.
I know this, it's kind of classic.
Target. And now we're there, and it's like, well, I can't be like mega bullish now because there's just no evidence for that I can see, yeah. Really.
So this is our place to show caution. I'm personally still pretty heavily in the market, but I'm also much more strongly looking for hedges and stuff. And I've been trying to do that on low time frames and mostly not with a great deal of success. But one of the things that I do think there's been opportunity for, there was some alts movement before that big spike, and that big spike crushed alts on the BTC pairs. And it gives me hope that we might be re-entering the zone of negative correlations, or at least somewhat decorrelated relationships between Bitcoin and altcoins, or maybe an inverse correlation to volatility is what the way I used to talk about it some. Do you think that that move may have been the trigger for an inverse volatility correlation?
Before we go there, one last thing I'll add to Bitcoin. Yeah. So I put out a Brave New Coin quarterly wrap up Q1 nice. Yesterday. So check that out. But I also calculated the quarterly price changes for Bitcoin. Even before like a quarterly future existed, there's still some decent evidence that the quarterly marking demarcations, you know, that the just arbitrary and human lifespan calendar, whatever, makes a big difference or impact on price. Hmm. So historically, Q2, Q4 has been the most bullish, just by number of up moves in those quarters. So we're in Q2, and I also think Q4 is going to be pretty bullish. But yeah, anyway, that's
fine. Interesting. I think actually along those same lines, there's a website called Skew that tracks a lot of this. But
yeah,
I think options expiry is going to start becoming more prevalent as well, because I think Deribit in particular has started to get some traction with their options. And as more open interest is brought to the options market, the options with quarterly expiries will start to probably impact spot markets the same way that they do in traditional markets. And so I know Deribit had a big expiry on March like 29th. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that'll become a bigger deal over time as well. And also volatility was like at all-time lows too, or close to it.
Yeah, so we were talking about open interest being like all-time highs before the move on almost everywhere. Like ETH long positions were at all-time highs before the move. And unsurprisingly, ETH kind of didn't really go anywhere. We can talk about that next as well. But yeah, so Deribit saw like record volume. CME saw record volume again.
60 million for Deribit options volume on a daily basis at the beginning of April.
So yeah, that's a lot. Not expiry either, right? That's new positions. It has to be, right?
Yeah, that's options volume. So total buys and sells. Expiry is more of like a cumulative thing, and I don't have that right in front of me. But to put that in perspective, most of their daily volume in like before February, usually it was below 10 million with spikes up to like maybe 20 million. So in late March, they started getting above 30 to 40 million with a peak at 60 million. So that's a lot of options trading for a new space, a new derivatives space like Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And that's not even CME. You said CME was also at record levels.
Yeah, so CME had a record day either yesterday or the day before, 4-3. Yeah. If you look at TradingView, they haven't really announced anything yet anywhere, but based on what TradingView's reporting, it's record volume in a day for them by a big amount.
Okay, so Deribit there's open interest for buy strike date. These SKU charts are great. It's SK3W.co. Terrible, terrible domain name. but then like /options is that. And there are over 19,000 Bitcoin of open interest for April 26th. And there are already 16,000 for June 28th. And 12,000 for September 27th. So those will continue to grow as those quarters come into as they become current quarter. But that amount of open interest, 19,000 Bitcoin on open interest for the end of April, I imagine we'll see some stuff around the end of April. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff, like new things that are starting to play in the market. We will get into that alts correlation thing in a minute, but while we talk about that type of shift or indicator, one that did not do so well this round, which has historically been pretty strong, is NVT. This is Willy Woo's. Do you remember what it stands for?
Network to value.
Network to value transaction, something or another. It's basically a measure of like on-chain transaction volume. And historically, when it has shown some divergences where like volume's going down and prices going up type of stuff, it's been a pretty decent indicator. And this time it got smoked because it was printing bearish signals right before that $1,000 move. So even if it does hint at future bearishness, at least in the short term, the move far outweighed the ability to position yourself off of that as an indicator. So there was some analysis from Willy Woo in terms of what that meant. And I think there were some folks that were commenting on it as well. That was interesting. But yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, you could say the same thing about TA that I'm about to say about FA, but I think it's wrong too often and not useful for the most part. Especially when you're comparing like today's market conditions and today's on-chain stuff to like 2013, 2014, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just like the protocol changes. There's new off-chain stuff. There's new exchanges. Everything's different, basically, you know? So
yeah.
I think to like compare that and say like this is bear, this is bull is tough in general. So I'm not a huge fan of NVT. I mainly talk about it because everybody else is looking at it, but I don't use it at all really to influence my decisions on anything. Yeah. When it's going up, it's bearish. When it's going down, it's bullish. That's kind of the most value that I get out of it.
Bloomberg and CNBC were also really struggling to find a narrative for why Bitcoin went up. I thoroughly enjoyed that. And they were like, traders are struggling to say why Bitcoin had a high volatility day. And like all the traders we know are like, nah, most people were looking for a pretty high volatility day to come. And but they were struggling with the narrative. And I was personally surprised that the tax narrative didn't already come in, because we're to the point where like most of those refunds are coming up on mid-April. Seemed to me like a tax narrative would have been a good one to apply. But do you think there's anything to that, whether it's a tax narrative or you know, any other kind of fundamental narrative that you can apply to that move, or do you think this has been largely a technical one?
Well, I feel like the legacy people, when they see a big move like this, they automatically assume it's news related or some whatever fundamental thing. Whereas, like, we've been talking about that target since February, mid-February at least, you know. So to people who are technical, not to like toot my own horn, but it wasn't like a super big surprise, you know.
And
the other thing was, they were saying there was some April Fool's ETF article, which I didn't even actually see until
after. I never did either. I think that one's pure garbage.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I don't care. As long as I trade it correctly and the system that I was using was working, that's really all that matters to me. But
I think the other big thing that I would qualify, or I would say it's like a narrative, was that there was so clearly interest in altcoins again for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
And that's Bitcoin's best use case still today, is transacting, you know, for the buying and selling of altcoins. And with Bitcoin as the base pair.
I would caveat that and say it's Bitcoin's prime use case is speculation, and alt's prime use case is speculation to gain more Bitcoin. That's how I would word that.
Right, right.
Personally.
But and altcoins had retracted so much that there wasn't really a whole lot more room for them to contract without at least some kind of like bullish interest. And they'd shown months of accumulation. And I think that even if you were looking for more down moves, like you wanted to say the whole, you know, thing since December has just been a big pennant or something like that, the struggle with that was that people were buying Bitcoin in order to buy altcoins. And like, that's a real way to float, help float the asset, is getting money, whether it's out of people's bank accounts, out of Tether, out of whatever. Like, people were interested in altcoins. And when you see a few of those altcoins move, and we've seen BNB and Raven and all these other ones, like, just have significant enough moves to where people start to say, hey, what's the next one? And yeah, I mean, I think that was a big part of what helped reverse the market, is altcoins stopped bleeding finally.
Yeah, and we talked about this last time too, but like, people rotating out of LTC into Bitcoin, or out of BNB into alts, EOS, you know, EOS to BTC, whatever. Definitely, you know, that was the other reason I was super, super sure we were going to go up. This stuff isn't happening in a vacuum, you know? So it's like, if everything else is going up around Bitcoin, and Bitcoin looks technically like it's about to move up, you know, I'm pretty confident that we're going to get that move.
Yeah. And what was super interesting to me is that when Bitcoin did move, historically during the bear market, when Bitcoin had strong up moves, altcoins basically went with it. And this time, because altcoins had pretty strongly been outperforming Bitcoin, Bitcoin tamed them a bit on the, at least like, few days. Like, certainly those 2 days where we had the big moves, but like, really almost this whole week, a lot of altcoins that had been grinding their way up or moving really quickly, whatever, they got hit pretty hard. Even the ones that had really long-term spikes, like I think of like BAT had that breakout above a multi-year range, and then it came back and hit that, you know, basically hit the full back test of the breakout.
Mm-hmm. Throwback, yeah.
Yeah, full throwback. Yeah, but that's like a gigantic move. I almost put my kids back in this overnight, and I didn't. I should have, because I think it's up 9% today. So yeah, it went up 35% and then retraced that 35% completely.
But you'll see that when it's just a Bitcoin move, you know, which is basically what this was.
Yeah. And I think that's to me, that's a positive sign in the market, because for so much of the bear market, it was a positive correlation between Bitcoin and altcoins, and starting to see a negative correlation, at least to volatility, so that if Bitcoin moves up quickly, alts die against Bitcoin and consolidate against the dollar or something, and then alts start to move when Bitcoin consolidates. Like, that's the type of cyclical rotation that is bringing strength into the market, in my opinion. So
I like to see that. I agree. It's like flywheel effect probably is the wrong metaphor, but you know, LTC, like we were saying weeks ago, that's kind of like the weather vane for everything.
Yeah.
And if that was mooning, another reason that I can be pretty confident that everything's going to be okay in the bull camp. And LTC is still kind of outperforming Bitcoin even here on that move. It, you know, had a deep retrace on the ratio, but it hit 100 plus or whatever it was on spot almost.
I think it was 99, 93 or something like that. Somebody dropped the hammer right before 100, which was great in my opinion.
Yeah. That's unsurprising. Just psychological resistance for sure.
Yeah.
You know, with having an LTC coming up, with the mempool being full with Veriblock potentially within the next couple of months, we could see a use case for LTC.
Yeah. But no, I think I think there's a lot of stuff that LTC interests me with. My kids traded this one mostly, and I like they sold all the way up, but they were fully out by like before 0.016 when people were calling for 0.016 and above. Mm-hmm. And when Bitcoin went up, I mean, LTC retraced all the way to 0.013 something, and then intraday, I'm on the weekly, I'm sorry. And then right after that went up to like almost 0.019, which is 0.019 for Litecoin is nearing all-time high territory on the pair. Like it's gotten over 0.02 a few times, but like that's pretty rare. So,
well, it's if you go to like Stamp or something, like there's when it first was traded, it was I think 0.3 or something ridiculous.
Oh yeah, I mean maybe way back then, but over the past like few years, basically if you're in Litecoin over 0.02, you're like you're just looking for a beating. So if it can make some kind of like big jump then above that range, then that would be a place where I'd be interested again. But I'm not interested in Litecoin at these relative Bitcoin levels. But the move that it had was impressive. And you mentioned Veriblock taking up all those on-chain transactions, fees. We already saw fees starting to go up on Bitcoin because of this move up. Veriblock's interesting because it just got listed and it just went live, I guess. Did it go live on the mainnet? Was that part of like why they did the sale when they did?
Yeah. Okay. So mainnet went live March 25th, and then
they did the sale just a couple days ago. An IEO.
Yeah, April 2nd was the IEO. Yeah.
Yeah, and IEOs are, as far as I understand, basically the same exact thing as ICOs, but they're operated by exchanges. So an initial exchange offering, I see no real difference. This one went for 10 cents on Bittrex, and Bittrex Bill, the CEO of Bittrex, I think he has a stake in Veriblock. Veriblock was taking up like 40% of Bitcoin transactions on testnet. So Veriblock's like securing altcoins, basically like attaching to the security of the Bitcoin main chain and essentially helping provide that, preventing 51% attacks and stuff for altcoins. We want to talk more about Veriblock maybe with someone on the team once they simmer down a bit. But yeah, so that one's super interesting to me. And then Binance had a couple of IEOs. They had a BitTorrent, Fetch, and some other I can't remember. And
Seller Network or something?
Yeah, Sealer or Seller. I don't know what it was called.
Yeah, I don't either.
Most of these are following the same exact roadmap as ICOs used to, as in they get bought up very quickly, and then they pump for a hot minute, basically shorter and shorter every time. And then they bleed out for a while and try to find their actual price in price discovery. I don't have a ton of interest in them, but I think it's interesting that there has been so much demand for them. And I'm a little surprised. It's like people didn't really learn their lesson, because I think these initial returns are going to just get lower and lower, personally. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I mean, it's the same ICO model. You know, it's like the exchanges are the new like pre-sale people who are like extorting, arguably, any ICO. You know, there are no winners here. Let's be clear.
There are winners, but it's the projects and
right.
the exchanges.
It's a vehicle for more money to go from more people to less people, you know?
Right.
But yeah, so the exchanges are massive, massive benefits here. The projects are benefits here because they don't have to worry about where they're going to get listed. They automatically get listed, which was previously the rate limiting factor. You know, like I do an ICO, great, but unless I'm on a secondary market,
I think that's what's going to limit the pumps as well. Because before it was like, say there's 10 ICOs, one of those gets a premier exchange listing, and therefore that one tends to pump really strongly. Mm-hmm. And with an IEO, the listing is getting priced in very quickly because it's listed right away. So I don't think people should look at an IEO and say, oh yeah, this is going to 100x because so many people are going to want it. I'm sure there's tradable setups, like there'll probably be some of the higher volume assets on those exchanges, but it's not something I'm personally super interested in, certainly from a getting involved in the IEO side of things. And I'm sure there's lots of restrictions on nationality and investor limitations and all that kind of stuff too. So,
yeah, but, I mean, I'll happily sit out of every single IEO from now until the end of history.
Yeah. But that's been a catalyst for at least some of the exchange coins. I know Binance and KuCoin both went up a lot with those as part of the reasoning why. We talked about that last time, but just wanted to throw that out there. Maybe some of those coins will end up becoming coins of interest.
Well, another part of the extortion narrative is in order to participate in these IEOs now, you're most likely going to have to proof of stake your exchange token, basically, which soaks up supply, increases demand artificially, you know?
Yep. While we're talking about tokens and staking, there's one piece of news that I didn't have on this, but I do want to ask you about, which is Coinbase is going to stake Tezos as part of Tezos custody. And I heard that it was Coinbase that was the major buyer in that Tezos pump. So I sold my bag to Coinbase. I'm pretty happy about that. Nice. but do you have any thoughts about Coinbase dipping their toes in the water with Tezos, especially amidst all the legal uncertainty?
I mean, I just think not bullish or bearish, but it's silly to value staking without considering the inflation or dilution narrative mm-hmm. of the coin. Like, if the staking doesn't outweigh dilution or inflation, then why stake? You know, it's like, what's the point? So I don't really get it.
I think it's so that you're essentially counterbalancing the inflation because you're staking. So really, you're...
But that's not the case with most of these projects. Most of these projects, the inflation outweighs the staking by factors of 10, you know?
Yeah, I think it depends on what percentage of people are staking and stuff. But I think the people who are particularly at risk are those who are holding but not staking.
Oh, for sure. They're losing. I mean, everybody, let's be clear here. Again, everybody's a loser here. but if you're holding a massive bag of something that's stakeable and you're not staking, it's like a double whammy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for whatever it's worth, I took that into consideration when I was buying an Tezos and I was staking mine while it was in that accumulation range. I don't even know what I earned, like a little bit, but not so much that it mattered to me versus like price action. but for people that are more looking for long-term entries and they are bullish on the project, I think staking's fine. But either way, it provided a fantastic narrative to pump Tezos and to trade it. And I was, again, like Bitcoin, it went further, faster than I would have anticipated. My first sell locations were roughly like the cloud top, which was the cloud didn't have a lot of history because it's not been trading for very long. But like, I mean, it went from from cloud top, this is not from bottom, but just from like cloud top to the top of the trading range, it went another 65%. So from my first sell to the top, it went another 65%, even though from bottom to my first sell was like 72%. So like it went up more than double from, you know, kind of the bottom of its accumulation range to the temporary top. Yeah, 178%. Huge gains, huge. And that took me by surprise. I was all out pretty well before the top, but then by the time it, right around when it was top, I was tweeting like, I know people have FOMO about Tezos because it just won't stop, but like, this is time to be cautious. And then it dumped immediately. So I actually just got back my first of hopefully several rebuys, because I'm still interested in Tezos. I still think that Tezos and some of these other newer coins have a lot of potential. But yeah, so I just hit my first rebuy, and I don't know. Do you think the Coinbase thing, or like, do you think Tezos is starting to get to the point where bad news is priced in and it's kind of a good news narrative from here on out?
I mean, in general, I don't know enough about it to speak intelligently about Tezos, but based on the chart, I mean, the 6 hour, what were you saying? You were tweeting, like, there's a really textbook tweezer top there, which is really good signal. Mm-hmm. And now it looks like it's building a massive head and shoulders.
Yeah, I know.
On the neckline there.
When I bought it back, I tweeted, I was like, I'm probably buying the right shoulder here, but so I'll keep an eye on that, but I'm buying. And so far I'm happy because it's up 15% in a day. So I'm not too worried about it yet, but
I mean, it's like, to me, all these new projects that have really no use case or anything beyond speculation, it's just like, I look at the Zcash narrative, and it's like, they've got X percent inflation or dilution, whatever it is, 40+%. So if any project comes close to that, even DCR is like 20%, which I didn't even know until the other day.
Decred.
I don't know how you can hold that long term. You know, even BAT, like, all these speculation spikes are one thing, but to not get diluted or inflated to oblivion long term is just difficult for me to get past, you know?
Yeah, maybe so. I do think with Zcash, for instance, I just think it hit such a sentiment bottom, and it was making a higher low. I was like, I'm in. Like, and you and everybody else trolled me about it. It worked out okay.
I don't think Zcash has a bottom, honestly.
Like, no, you don't.
Like, it's still uninteresting to me. Its entire life has been spent below the 200 moving average. Like,
yeah,
that says enough. That says enough in one sense that I need to know about Zeke from a technical perspective, you know?
Yeah, it did get absolutely smoked with that Bitcoin run. I think my kids still have some. I got out of it at some point in profit. I don't know how much anymore. It's been a minute, but I'm still looking for entries because I still like the contra narrative, the contra sentiment narrative.
I mean, the slope on that downtrend is like 45%. It hasn't accumulated like at any period ever. Yeah. Like, it's just been straight down, you know?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, if you're buying Zcash and holding, you're paying for Zuku's Whole Foods runs. So
I know. I love
it. Like, yes. Okay. Look, like, they're doing great things technologically. They're, you know, they're paying devs or whatever they're doing. I don't really know, but I just don't get it. And I think Zcash is going to be the first project that actually merges with another coin, and that coin's going to be ETH. And this has been talked about on Twitter. Maybe it'll be Casper, you know, Zeke Casper. When Vlad forks off to Casper Labs, and then there's this merger between Casper and Zeke. This is like massive speculation at this point.
I love it. No, you have insider information, right?
Yeah, totally. No, but that's the only way I see Zeke ever being worth anything, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, there's no problem with, in my mind, like, paying devs or having treasury rewards or blah, blah, blah.
But yeah, like, theirs does seem to me a little bit obscene. But it doesn't make me less interested in trying to to call that bottom and be clever, which has never worked out well for me in the past. So it probably won't this time either. I am playing a little tighter this time. Hence why I'm not in it currently. Cause I did at least make sure I was going to stop out and all that good stuff. This brings me to, maybe we can kind of finish along these lines. Like, a lot of people are calling for alt seasons. A lot of, you know, people just want to go straight back to the what was the same old thing, like the pump everything to oblivion, mega hype cycle. Peter Brandt tossed a parabola, like going on Twitter, going to new all-time highs. Saw Ethereum charts that like put it orders of magnitude beyond its prior Bitcoin relative all-time high. And I'm just sitting here saying, look, guys, I may think the bottom is in, but like we are not going to have a market that hits a hype cycle quite like what you're talking about, in my personal opinion, for quite some time. Those things, they need time, you know, like they just need time to just simmer. And I think 2017 is too fresh in people's memory, and 2018 is also still too painful for a lot of people to take risks on it. When I say a lot of people, I mean mostly like new money entrants, like people that got burned, need to forget about it, build up their wealth again to take a new risk on crypto. Doesn't mean I don't think there's opportunities. I just think these grandiose like 10x or bags ideas are a little far-fetched for now. But I do think there's a lot of tradable ranges.
One thing I heard in like the depths of the bear run, and shout out to Travis Kling for also, I agree with him on most things. I disagree with him here, but a lot of people were saying, you know, it was, so crypto in general has been led by retail, and the next wave is going to be institutional. And like, I couldn't disagree more, because at the end of the day, the greatest use case for crypto is speculation, and the barrier to entry is zero. You know, anybody can do this at any time they want, really. So the narrative during the bear cycle was like, all these people got burned on the last bull run because they bought the top or whatever, and they're not going to want to get back in, you know, and I couldn't disagree more. So yeah, like eventually we're going to see it. I don't think now's the time. We did see a lot of alts moving, but to me, those are just manipulated and P&D'd, and basically the worst part of this market, which is just illiquid bull or bear runs that are controlled by very few people, you know?
Yeah. I think some of them are going to be really interesting. Like, I think maybe some of the stuff that we see have real pumps will at least have some better fundamental narrative. It doesn't necessarily mean that like they're the future or they're going to work perfectly, but I think we'll start to see strength pump and weakness stagnate. And I'm excited about that because it helps separate the field. Whereas the last like bull run or whatever, when alts really went crazy, it didn't really matter what you were. And in fact, like mostly the scammier, the better. And yeah. We're still seeing some of that.
Look at BitConnect. I mean, that's
I know.
The history of histories of scale. You could literally throw a dart at a barn door and make 10x, you know what I mean, in that last bull run.
Yeah. And I think while we're still going to have a lot of like scammy pumps, I think we are going to see some projects that have managed their treasury well or have good economics built in and have some good use cases for their project and start getting people or institutions, whoever their clients are, using their projects. I think that will show eventually in some of the pricing of some of these. So those are what I'm really seeking out. And it's hard not to chase like this pump or that pump, but I'm looking for stuff that has a lot of development power behind it, good treasury management. If they did an ICO, trying to see, was it done responsibly, that kind of thing. But
yeah, a few more things I want to just hit on real quick. So, yeah. So XRP, ETH, and XMR. So XMR, like a couple weeks ago, when I was researching for a Brave New Coin XMR article, there's been a massive uptick in ransomware and like crypto lockers and all this other stuff. So to me, that was like a fundamental use case. Like, it's not a good one, but
it's still a fundamental use case.
Well, it's the use case for Monero that was happening. Monero's been super aggressive in like culling ASICs from the chain. It's got like some weird tailing emissions coming. So I'm bullish on Monero fundamentally from that perspective. So that's like a use case coming up to watch for.
Yeah, ETH, Monero's had very clear accumulation in the price as well, price and volume.
Yeah, I mean, I just like the chart. It looks like Bitcoin did pre-breakout, a couple days ago breakout. For ETH, also looks pre-breakout to me, ascending triangle. Like, as long as it's above 130, it's fine. Like, the BTC pair is slaughtered, the same with XRP. The BTC pair is completely slaughtered.
I think the Ethereum BTC pair just looks brutal. Like, it's on its last hopes for being some kind of like spring. Mm-hmm. But like on the daily, it's kissing the underside of the 200-day moving average after breaking below like a pennant. Like, it's just because it's trailing Bitcoin so badly, I'm not interested in holding it beyond short-term stuff, because I need it to prove itself against these, you know, daily moving averages before I'm willing to hold it again. But yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So all trend indicators are showing that ETH BTC is really bearish, and not just from yesterday, but it was leaning bear.
It was already doing that. Yeah. But versus the dollar, it's looking like super accumulation, like biding its time type of situation, right?
Right. So to me, the easier trade here is going long ETH USD versus fooling around with ETH BTC.
Yeah.
Or even fooling around with BTC USD. Because to me, the upside for that pattern is like 250-ish, 240, 250, which is basically ETH or EOS hitting $6, which it did the other day.
Yeah.
So one way that ETH gets to 250 and still holds the bearish ETH BTC ratio is if BTC keeps going from here, which I think isn't going to happen, but has to happen if I think ETH is going up, you know? And yeah. ETH BTC is bearish. So if I like try to line up all that stuff in like a confluence perspective.
Are you worried about the margin long speculative positioning on Ethereum? For people listening, it's like always funding for shorts on the derivatives exchanges, BitMEX and Deribit, and meaning shorts are getting paid to be short. And yeah. Bitfinex is like 80% plus long on Ethereum, which has historically been the decent indicator of like just overall sentiment being too bullish or too bearish. It's hyper bullish on Ethereum.
Yeah, there are definitely market metrics. I don't know what to call it, like funding and OI metrics. Stuff. Sure. That do not support the 250 target at all, you know? It'll be super interesting to see what happens here.
Additionally, I wonder if there could be some sort of like either attack or crisis around like some of this maker funding, like loan system type of stuff that's been going on. In the event of some kind of move down, like if Ethereum could be more strongly affected by that. I don't know enough about it. It's an area that I want to learn more. It's like people going long on Ethereum and taking loans to do so, and then using the loan to do other stuff that's also long Ethereum. Like, it just kind of sounds terrible to me.
Anytime you take circulating supply out of circulating supply,
yeah,
that's bullish, you know, just at baseline. So if we're taking ETH out of circulating supply for Maker or for
proof of stake. But if the people doing so are also reliant on the price of Ethereum staying above a certain level before they're margin called to turn their loan back in or bring additional collateral.
Based on what the CDPs are sitting right now, like, there's not that much at risk for liquidation above like 120. So even if it goes to that level, it's not a big deal. I think the bigger risk is if the MakerDAO gets hacked, which is like a 0.0001% chance, but it's a non-0% chance that can happen. So that, I think, is a bigger issue.
Well, my bet personally is that it's going to take you a while on these Ethereum USD longs. And I think the Ethereum BTC chart will continue to play out bearishly if Bitcoin moves up, because I think personally that ETH USD might be range bound for a bit to get some of the speculators out. And also the alignment that I see on the moving averages with Ethereum USD really reminds me of a lot of the other altcoins that took a hot minute to like just all converge. So like the 20, 50, 200 all in the same place, price in the same place, everything just like in this major accumulation range, and just make that as painful as possible while everything else is moving, make everybody mad, and then eventually make its move. But it's not one I'm in a hurry for. And I say that it'll be $250 by the next time we talk. But
well, like I'm long-term bearish on ETH, but based on technicals in a vacuum, that's it looks like pre-Bitcoin, you know?
Technicals in a vacuum, I agree with you. I'm just not, I don't think it will outperform other assets in the market. I think there's too many things that makes it potentially underperform other stuff in the market.
Oh, I agree with you there 100% too. But I also think this is the easiest chart to trade right now based on tech. Like the pattern is what it is. So I don't know.
I think your reasoning for that is because you trade fewer pieces of junk than I do. So like I can find stuff that I like better than this in the world of like mid cap alts, you know? And I think you probably want to trade like top 10 cryptocurrencies more than I do.
Yeah. I mean, this is a multi-month pattern that's coming to an end. You don't see that too often, so I like to take those opportunities when I.
You're probably right. You could convince me if we talked longer about it.
But no, I agree. The market sentiment or whatever is stacked against anything happening higher on ETH right now, for sure. Funding and like if funding wasn't so 87% long, by the way, on Bitfinex right now.
Yeah.
It wasn't so stacked. Like if longs came down significantly, I would be much more bullish.
If sentiment was negative, let's say ETH had Zcash sentiment, I would be hyper bullish Ethereum. But like all the Ethereum builders and all that crap, they're still so pumped, and everybody's like putting their money where their mouth is, their time, all that stuff. And maybe that's got some fundamental juice, but like it's just too bullish of sentiment. Like I can't. It's hard to get on board that train. And you know, I'm not sure. You said in a chat with me earlier, like sometimes the dumb money wins. maybe that's true here, but I'm not buying it. And for what it's worth, you weren't talking about Ethereum people. You were talking about the fact that we haven't had a major retrace on Bitcoin yet. So like someone could have FOMO longed 4,800 and they're like totally fine right now. They're in a great profit. And to me, that's worrisome. Like they have to sweat it a little bit, in my opinion. But I think the same could be said of Ethereum. Like there's so much positive sentiment. I need people to sweat that a little bit before I can get too bullish.
The other reason I'm bullish is if you look at the daily cloud.
It's atrocious.
What? It's bullish.
The dollar. Yeah, the dollar one.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. The ETH BTC pair, there's no hope. Like, guaranteed.
Yeah, if I was to hedge short right now on a Bitcoin pair, and I do think this is actually probably somewhat dangerous in the current market environment, the Ethereum Bitcoin pair, I'm most interested in shorts on that on a Bitcoin pair.
Something else someone else brought up to me based on market sentiment is there are actually more ETH USD pairs now, so the ETH BTC pair might be less relevant long term, but I can't not look at it from a relative value perspective.
Yeah,
like if you pull up the XRP ETH chart, oh man, that looks like it's about to go to zero. But it's like, it's so, if you pull it up, there's a massive head and shoulders on that. So that tells you jump out of XRP, jump into ETH. If you put it online, put it online and get rid of all the noise and stuff. Like that looks like a trade I want to take 10 times up 10 as soon as that breaks that.
XRP is up like a bunch today.
Yeah.
Sometime recently, I couldn't find where I'd posted it, but I had posted this chart where there was the slow bleed of XRP versus Bitcoin in 2018, and then it just melted. And mm-hmm. I drew a corresponding fractal leading into whatever the last week or so, the end of March. And we started to follow that same fractal down until we have this huge candle today. But I think the candle we're getting from XRP BTC right now is just a trap, because I think this thing's ready to really dive relative to Bitcoin.
But it's also on Coinbase now. So there's ARBots. There's all these other factors in play. Like, I'm not bullish on XRP at all. But, you know, if everything is bullish on the USD pair, everything will move up on the USD pair. It's like there will be winners and losers there as far as percentages, but it's highly unlikely that XRP goes south when everything else goes north, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree with that. And it's why I think if you're looking for short side stuff, you need to think strategically about how you're going to do that.
Yeah. And it's back to the ETHUSD argument. Like, there's easier trades to make, I think, like where we sit, regardless of relative value trades, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's leave it there. I don't have a whole lot to add.
Oh, one last thing. BNC. BNC added a XRP index.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So is this available via TradingView yet? Or
It'll be available like within the next week or two. But awesome. It's just nice to see everything on one chart with volume and since 2015. I don't know when it got actually listed on. It's already up there. That's cool. But no, I don't know when it got listed on Stamp, actually, historically.
What's the ticker? Because
I know
the
company. I don't actually know. It might be XLX, but.
Yeah, I think it is.
Or RLX, maybe? I think it's RLX.
We'll find that and put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
The Ethereum liquid index is actually on NASDAQ because y'all have a partnership with NASDAQ. So it's got some fun gaps in it right now.
It's not all the data is there right now, but like I told them, this goes to anybody anywhere. This is my advice for everybody trying to get popular on media. Like, give your best stuff away for free and people will come to you. Like, that's how I've operated myself, and it's definitely paid off in spades for me. So so I want them, if it were up to me, I would have the full
history.
Full index, like, and that might happen eventually, just like the BLX, like the ELX will probably be on there.
Yeah. Harebrained drawings go on BLX because I love the history. So I appreciate y'all doing that. And it's really great. I pulled it up on our screen share right now because it's like the crazy person TA, like trying to fractal everything that's ever happened on Bitcoin on like the three market cycles that we've had.
I mean, if you're a technical person, you want to see all the data in one place, you know? So it's useful.
Super nice.
Yeah.
So check out stuff that Josh has going on at Brave New Coin. He's been doing some YouTube videos. So that happened, meaning the move up. He has predicted 5K by May Moku, as stated on this podcast, came true with a month to spare. So congrats.
It's like when stuff happens that you said was going to happen, do you pat yourself on the back? What do you do? You know, do you acknowledge it in some way? For me, the trading is like the reward, right? The right. Monetary reward.
Well, some people just want the clout, you know?
Yeah.
So put a little clout in your clout piggy bank. You deserve it.
Okay. Thank you.
And we'll catch everybody next time. Have a good one.
Thanks. Take care. Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house.